You're listening to 666 ABC Canberra, where we're broadcasting live from the Moon Reunion here at the Southern Cross Club in Woden. Getting the astronauts to the moon was an immense challenge, but they weren't just there for the scenery, astounding as that was. A major purpose of the moon mission was to collect samples. Professor John Lovering from the School of Earth Sciences at the University of Melbourne and Professor Ross Taylor, visiting fellow from the Research School of Earth Sciences at the ANU, were among the very first to get their hands on the stuff, and they're both here today. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. Yes.
Meteors are space rocks. What made moon rocks so special? John Lovering?
Oh, for me, I guess it was something that I've... Looking up at the moon, as one does, and just marvelling on the wonderful sight of a full moon, just wondering what the hell it was there.
So you wanted to know what the moon was made of, didn't you?
Absolutely. And I didn't think it was green cheese, actually, but it certainly was something I really wanted to have a look at. Because I'd been working on meteorites. So I'm always interested in extraterrestrial materials. So what about the moon?
Ross Taylor, you were the first scientist to get your hands on the rocks at the Lunar Receiving Laboratory in Houston. Why was an Australian scientist involved?
Well, NASA had to get together a team of experts to do a preliminary examination of the samples, and they had installed a spectrographic method of doing this analysis, and I happened to be the co-author of the standard textbook on the subject, so I got dragged in.
And how much material did you have to work with?
A few milligrams.
And what precautions did you take? Because it couldn't have been as simple as just unloading the rocks from the apartment.
Quarantine through glove boxes, and we had to work through rubber gloves. All the equipment was in behind these glass screens, and it made life very difficult because the powders were very sticky because they were completely dry.
You got the first results very quickly. What did they tell you?
Well, they told us immediately that we were looking at a basaltic lava, but also it was unusually high in iron, chromium, titanium and elements like this, which made the analysis exceedingly difficult.
Why was that?
Well, they have lots of spectral lines which interfere with all the lines we're used to using, and these problems had to be solved in real time.
John Lovering, you were at rather more leisure. What did you examine?
Well, I got a number of samples, some the chunks of little basalt chunks, others were the dust particles. And we were mainly involved in looking at the detailed mineralogy of the minerals in these materials, particularly the basalts.
You said it reminded you of Melbourne basalt, didn't
well,
you?
Well, it does. I mean, if you dropped it on, if you dropped it on the ground, you know, you wouldn't be able to pick it up for a bit of bluestone on the pavement. But when you look in detail, of course, then you see, as Ross said, the overall chemistries are different. But even the individual mineralogies have some differences. But the basic minerals are virtually the same. But we found, for example, I think it was the only, maybe it was the... There were two moon minerals found, and we found one of them, and we called it Tranquillityite, after the Sea of Tranquility.
Very nice.
And that was a great honour to be able to do that. I know the Americans were a bit irritated that we had more information than they did about it, so we got to give it the name, but there it was.
And how did you get your rock sample home? Because you brought it back, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to America, to Houston, to pick it up. Ross was already there, of course, working hard behind the scenes. But I went over there to collect some and saw the first samples were brought out to me, and I just jumped with joy to see what they were. They were these great chunks of basalt.
People, in fact, had been very concerned about the moon dust before the landing, hadn't they, and the particular properties that it might have.
Well, it wasn't properly appreciated until we got the hold of the dust. And the dust, of course, coated everything, coated the astronaut suit, the inside of the lunar module. And so when the lunar module was opened in the Pacific Ocean, that was already exposed to lunar dust. But that wasn't really appreciated before the missions. The dust was sticky because it was bone dry. Sort of electrostatic attraction was what made it stick.
And that powder-fine stickiness could actually be a problem if we ever go back to the moon. I think we've only ever been to the moon during a lunar morning. Am I correct?
Yes, there would be one would have to have some decent filters and so on. But it's not as bad a problem as the Martian dust, which is acidic as well.
And, of course, the lunar day itself is, I think, 700 hours long. So when I speak of the lunar morning, it's quite a long one. John Lovering, tell me about the bigger picture. What did those discoveries that you derived from the samples mean for our understanding of the moon, the planets, our relationship to the moon?
Well, the first thing I guess you've got to say is the general landscape and the history of that surface of the moon, a hugely cratered surface, which goes back in its major impacts, cratering impact sites, taking you back to ages of, 3 to 4 thousand million years. It probably represents something that the Earth's surface looked like in those sort of early periods. But unlike the Earth, Moon has no water on it, it has no wind, there's no atmosphere. So everything that was happening then looks pretty well the same as it is now.
So the origins of the Moon itself and the Earth's current state were present in this evidence from the Moon?
Well, you can look at the Moon and see, I believe, exactly what that early stages in the Earth's evolution would have been before the oceans condensed and all those early effects of the atmosphere and the oceans.
It's been wonderful to talk to you both. You were both there for the analysis of these vital scientific samples, the men to get your hands on them among the first in all the Earth. But thank you very much indeed for being with me today. Ross Taylor and John Lovering, good to have you on the program.
We do owe the United States a great debt for making these samples available to anyone who was qualified.
Well, and it's been a wonderful spirit of cooperation that's been evidenced through the proceedings today as well. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure, Genevieve.
You're listening to 666 ABC Canberra. Here's another of the great sounds of 1969.